Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today, returning to show us some more cool stuff, is director, writer, producer, animator, Haz Dalal, because he's got this new cool project. You may remember a few years ago, we talked about a movie he produced called The Beyond, which was partially created with something called Unreal Engine. Now he's gone full bore. He's dove entirely into the pool with an animated sci-fi thriller called Max Beyond. It entirely created with the Unreal Engine. And the cool part is this is just the beginning of the world of Max Beyond. Haz, welcome back, my friend.
Hi, Summer. Good to be back.
Talk about where Max Beyond came from, because this is an interesting animation style. It's a different sort of 3D-ish kind of animation style, but the fact that you're relying on this Unreal Engine to produce this entire film. Talk about the movie first.
Sounds crazy, right? When you put it like that, definitely. You know, originally, Summer, this wasn't even supposed to be animation. In fact, like I had done my last two movies, right? The Beyond and Origin Unknown. And this was around 2019, and I was getting ready to shoot my next sci-fi thriller, which is a much bigger budget, and we're casting. And I was using a very early version of Unreal Engine 4.12, I think it was, to do previs, which is basically like, you know, animate storyboards. So I was using the game engine already to do this stuff. But, you know, my background has come from visual effects, and I did previs back in the day. And I remember doing previs for this movie in Unreal, and I was showing it to executives, and they're like, what is this? I go, oh, this is previs, what we're going to shoot. They're like, no, we've seen previs. Previs is gray and blocky, and, you know, it's very rough. This is fully rendered. It looks like a video game cinematic. And I'm like, oh, no, this is all in-game. They couldn't quite get their head around. But I remember, like, on a plane back from LA, and I was like, yeah, people thinking, like, this is an animated film. And, like, why are people not making animated content using the video game engine as opposed to the really long-winded conventional pipeline used to create big animated films? So I kind of, like, just let it percolate for a while. And then the pandemic hit, right? And I was like, oh, man, there's no live action projects happening. The live action film that we were going to make got cancelled because the cast wouldn't come over and finances pulled out and all of that jazz, which every film producer can relate to. So I remember going to my film producer partner, Paula Crickard, who had worked with me on The Beyond. I was like, listen, man, like, we don't know what's happening in this pandemic, but like, I think we got something with Unreal here, and I think we should just make an animated film. And obviously, it took a bit more convincing than just going to make an animated film. So me and one of my colleagues, Andrea Tetechi, we kind of put together a test sequence, and we showed it to Paula, and Paula was like, holy crap, like, you weren't kidding. We can make an animated film like this. This is insane. And so we were like, well, we can't spend 2-3 years developing a script. We kind of want to go now. So we went into a treasure trove. Every production company has a treasure trove of ideas, right? And every director, writer comes up with ideas, and you kind of shelve it. And we had this one idea called Rift originally. Actually, no, it was called Brother originally. It was basically about this big brother breaking out of his little brother out of this medical facility. It's like this big high skate movie set in one big tall building, which is this medical facility. Think like The Raid meets Akira kind of vibe. Okay. Right? It's kind of that's how I always pitch it that way. And it was going to be a contained film, right? But it was unshootable. When you read the treatment I had wrote, it was like physics-defying action sequences. It was like multiverses. It was unshootable, like for like an indie filmmaker. So we kind of parked it. So when it came to animation, my business partner Paula was like, well, why don't you take the most batshit crazy idea you have and utilize the animation medium for that? And we went ahead and we bought a writer on board called Stavros Pambalis. And me and Stavros started writing the script. But here's the interesting thing, Summer. Usually you write the script and then you go out and raise financing and casting. We didn't do it that way. While we were writing the script, we were already using Unreal Engine to start blocking out the shots. We started bringing in temp assets, rough characters, started blocking stuff out and showing it to the writer. And the writer's like, wait, what? We're making this film as we're writing? This is insane. I've never done this before, but hey, what the hell? And all of a sudden, we had this really interesting workflow. But we hadn't got it fully financed. We were still just testing the waters. And what we ended up doing was, we're not doing like a 10-minute test sequence, but we didn't go around saying, hey, here's a test sequence. Can you finance it? We were financing it already. And also, not sure if you noticed, but like The Beyond was actually a profitable indie movie. I know it's very rare to hear. Yeah, I mean, it's really rare to say profitable indie film, but it was. So with the profits we had made, we put it back into the company so that we can keep making content. That was kind of like the team's drive, right? And hire more people and so on. So we did a 10-minute test sequence and we showed it to a bunch of people. And one of the people we showed it to were Epic Games, the people who make Unreal Engine. Mm-hmm. And they were like, first off, this feels like an anime. This has never been done or not been done at the time in the game engine. And also, you're making a 93-minute movie in Unreal. What can we do to help you? So I'm like, well, you know, if you got some money, that would be great. And they end up giving us 2 mega grants. It's called the Epic Mega Grant, which is a grant you could apply for. And if they assess it, if they like it, they give you some money. Now, they didn't finance the movie. Even though the money was used to make the movie, Epic don't finance movies or games. People think that all the time, but they don't. They finance the use of the engine in very cool and smart ways, right? So what we were doing was we were building our own anime cell shaders. We were creating tools that didn't really exist in Unreal 4.19 at the time. Bear in mind, we have Unreal Engine 5.4 today, which is super amazing, super, super fast and slick. Back then, we didn't have any of those tools. So Epic gave us some money, like to kind of kickstart the project. And then from there, we went on and we got additional financing from other equity financiers. Because here's what we did. The 10-minute sequence I mentioned about earlier, we showed that to people. And instead of saying it was a test sequence, we'll say, hey, here's some 10-minute dailies. We're in production. This train is moving, baby. And if you want to join the journey. If not, we're going to make the film anyway, because that's what we're going to do. It's going to take slightly longer, but we're going to make the film. All of a sudden, psychology changes, right? Because now you're not like, oh, you know, we're pitching. We're like, no, we're making this. And if you like it, join us. So we had some finances were like, hard no, good luck, go for it. And we had some were like, oh, man, you know, we don't want to miss out on this. And what was really cool, we were very careful not to bring so many producers and executives on, because you don't want to overblow a project. And this was very experimental. No one at the time had made a movie in a video game engine, not the way we were doing it. So we were like, look, we want 100% creative freedom. We want to do what we want. We don't want to be answering to a board of executives like you would traditional movies. It kind of went back to what we did on The Beyond in a way, but with animation. And here's the thing also, animation has always been considered as a expensive medium. That whenever I go pitch, like, what else you got? And I go, well, I've got this animated show. Nope, not interested. Too expensive. You need a big animation studio. It was always considered as being a very expensive thing. So I never imagined myself doing animation until I got into Unreal Engine, started understanding how motion capture works, how affordable it can be. And at your fingertip, you can literally create and block out a movie if you wanted to. So for me, the fact that I was able to use real-time technology to get to that point, people like, we had executives like Yarif Lerner. So Yarif, for those Googling him, you know, he is a prolific producer who's made movies like Rambo, Expendables 4, Hitman's Bodyguard, all the big action films. He's that. But he's also a really good friend of ours, especially working with Paula Crickard, because Paula Crickard, my business partner, was a post-producer on those movies. So he saw the 10-minute scene and he was like, I've never worked for animation. I don't know what all this gaming engine is, but you guys are looking like you're pushing the envelope here. So what can I do to help? So he gave a little bit of money and he came on as an executive, which really helped kind of like give the project a bit more clout. We already had Epic Games, obviously, which was an amazing clout to have. And then we had a friend, a really good friend producer of ours called Amy Garner from Fine Art Films. Again, she had no idea about the gaming engine and stuff, but she was like, I've never seen anything being done like this. So what can I help? What can I do to help? And here's the thing. The minute you have skin in the game, the minute you are saying we're in production, people are like, oh, you guys have taken the risk and you guys are doing it, right? You guys are doing it. Then what can we do to help you? no matter how big or small. And then from there, we end up getting more technology sponsorship with NVIDIA. We got sponsorship from Asus, Reillusion, and all of a sudden the pieces started to come together. But here's the thing, that is not how movies are made. You know, usually you go and get a pre-sale, you attach a cast, and you go and raise equity and soft money and all of that stuff. We didn't do any of that. We use technology sponsorship, we use our profits from the beyond, and we were using a video game engine to generate the frames. So already that was like, people were like, you guys are batshit crazy, but go off and do it, apart from the ones that were supporting us. And then eventually we start to realize we kind of need some like really talented actors to be involved on this. And again, like traditionally you would go to your CAA, your WMEs, the big talent agencies. And we're like, we don't want to do that. And also we don't have the money to do that. And also it's a pandemic, right? So it's going to be tough to kind of get hold of these actors. So what we did was we looked at the video game world. And we did research and we realized that the video game industry is probably the biggest. If you combine film, television, and music, the video game industry is bigger of all of those three combined. So we're like, okay, there's a massive audience base there. And I had worked with an actress called Jane Perry, who you may remember from The Beyond. Mm-hmm. So Jane Perry, after The Beyond and a bunch of other projects she did, she ended up becoming a rock star in the world of video games. So she ended up winning a BAFTA, I think like a couple of years ago, she won a BAFTA. She's been in Cyberpunk 2077, Hitman, Returnal, and a bunch of big, massive AAA video games. So she's like the equivalent of a A-lister in movies, but in the video game world. So I remember just ringing up Jane, saying, hey, Jane, I don't know if you're working at the moment, but like doing this movie. And she's like, yeah, I'm in. I'm like, okay. Because she's just like, I know what you're going to do is going to be cool. And you're going to be doing things that are completely unconventional. I'm in. So I'm like, great. So we got her. And then we end up getting someone called Dave Fennoy. And Dave Fennoy, again, another legend. You know, he did the voice for the Walking Dead game. He was been in stuff like Baldur's Gate and Blizzard's Warcraft. Like, another big name. And then we got this kid. And casting the kid was hard. So like, that... For us, putting that movie together while making the movie was very unconventional. And to us, that for me, when I think about that, like speaking to you now about it, I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't think I'll do that today, thinking about it. Like, I think because we're in that mode of pandemic and we're like, we don't know what's going to happen. Let's just put our best foot forward. We're not just making the movie. So we end up making a movie really about this kid that has his special abilities that could kind of like control the fabric of space and time and tap into multiverses. And this is an 8-year-old kid. And then you got this adopted brother, who's a PTSD Marine, who adores his adopted brother so much to the point that he knows his brother's being experimented on for his abilities and he'll do whatever it takes to break him out. But here's the twist. Every time he breaks him out, he dies. And his brother has to reset time in order to find the right reality where his brother does break him out. But here's another little high-stake twist. The more Max, the little kid, resets time, the weaker he gets. So there is this such a high-stake moment where you're thinking, is this kid ever going to find the right reality? And you start to realize that in order to find the right reality, there's certain consequences that have got to happen in order to disrupt the fabric of time and space. So we go really crazy Stephen Hawking, quantum physics involved, but I had to do it in a way that was acceptable in animation. So essentially that's what we end up making in a game engine.
I love how you're looking back on how you put all these pieces together. And while you're in the middle of it, putting it all together, you're just rushing and you're just excited about everything. But now that it's all done and you look back, you're like, I was insane.
Yeah, literally.
So you had mentioned that you had taken the Unreal Engine and added tools, plugins, filters to get some of the effects you wanted to see in the animation. Talk about getting people to develop those for you. And yeah. Was Epic Games surprising going, oh, can we use that?
Well, first off, like what we end up doing, there was no filters or plugins. That was the thing. Like we end up, when you're making a game, it's very much code and art combined to make video games, right? So what we'll end up doing, we're already in a video game engine and there's a lot of control you can do with a game engine to do things that you couldn't necessarily do. So for example, Unreal Engine is what you call PBR, photo-based rendering, right? And here's the other thing, Summer, like, while we're making this, I think season two of Love, Death, and Robots had come out. So the expectation for CGI animation, especially adult animation, because this essentially classed as an adult animated film, we're like, people are going to expect us to create Love, Death, and Robots on a budget. And that's not what we can do. We had to manage expectations. So we consciously, as a team, decided, like, we are not going to try and create photorealistic Love, Death, and Robots episode one of season two quality. We are going to go back and create a unique style that lives by itself and stands up for itself. So this is where we had to develop tools, because we had to basically not do photo-based rendering, but create cel-shaded, but in a 3D-esque way where I can move the camera in 3D, but our characters are built in a very stylized way. And the more stylized we went, the more we realized, oh, this is more of a piece of art as opposed to trying to be realistic and fall into the uncanny valley, which is what a lot of CGI still does. Like, you're like, is this real? It's not real. Oh, it's too creepy. So, but at the same time, we knew that none of us were Pixar level animators. So we're like, how are we going to make an animated film? And we don't have an army of animators. And that's where things like motion capture came in. So a lot of the tools we end up developing, and when I say we, literally, is that I would design the tools and kind of do like a rough mock-up of what I was after. And Andrea Tetecci, who's like my ninja, he's now my head of CG, head of development at the company. But like, I've worked with Andrea since 2014 on my first short film, Sync. And then he came on The Beyond, and he's worked on Original 9. He's worked on literally every project. He's now a core component of the company. Which I think really shows that, you know, the people that you choose to be friends with and support you through end up becoming colleagues, which is amazing. So Andrea, who's never done much C++ coding, had to dive in and do really hardcore coding, tools development, to kind of figure out how I could get what I want without breaking the engine. That's the thing about directors touching game engines or animation tools is a big danger. So Andrea were like, every time you break something, I have to fix it. So I'm going to build these set of tools. You tell me, what is it you want? So one of the things I wanted to do was, after doing motion capture, here's the thing. Our budget was tight. So we only had one mocap suit per motion capture artist that were working across the world. So we had a lovely woman called Gabriella, who was based in Florida. We had a guy in Montreal called Alex Kong, amazing animator guy, had his own motion capture suit. So each of them had to mocap their own thing. And then we would bring the mocap together to create conversation between two people. Now, the biggest problem is that eye line won't match, right? Because everyone's looking at their own ups and downs. So I wanted a tool that allowed me to adjust the eye line, adjust the head, all in engine as a director, without having to go back to the animators to do stuff, right? And he built a tool to do that. And all of a sudden we're like, oh, I want to be able to change the hand gestures. Oh, I want to be able to have a tool. And the tool started building up.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. And but at the same time, it's like, I can't believe I had the luxury of having a game engine, asking what I want built so that I can do the job. And Andrea would go and build all these tools. And then Sam Rebella, who's our lighting artist, will come in and start building special lighting rigs. Mark Cheng, who'll come in and start building camera rigs. All of a sudden, you've got a bunch of people that are just coming together to make stuff. It's just, imagine there's like hundreds of thousands of Lego pieces in this room, and all these people coming in just to help build it together with you. It's a really good feeling, especially in a time when there's such an uncertainty and horrible things happening in the world. It was a great way for everyone to come together and build something together, and egos aside. Yeah.
Okay. So you guys write a scene. You send it off to be rendered. The rendering comes back in what? A day or two? You add the motion capture and animation in. You render those, and then you go in as a director and reposition people's heads and hands and arm movements to get what you're looking for, and then you do it again with the next scene. That is
actually
unbelievable.
I mean, actually, Summer, it's actually even more condensed than that. We don't even have a rendering process, right? So here's the thing. So what you mentioned is exactly what you would do in a typical CGI animated show. That's exactly the way you describe it. It's perfect, exactly what you would do. What we did was not that. we condense the bottleneck of what you would get or the pipeline in animation. So in animation, you would do the storyboard, you then do an animatic, then you do a layout, then you do the previs, then you do the lighting, shading, animation, effects, and then you do the rendering, then you do the compositing, then you got your final shot, right? That's essentially the pipeline. We kind of took all of that, threw it in a bin, and said, we're going to build the environment in the game engine. We're going to bring the characters from all the different, like we use software like Maya, Blender, C4D. Mm-hmm. We build our characters and we bring them into Unreal. We then bring our cameras. Now we have a live set in the game engine and we just move the camera in real time and render it in real time. So if my shot was 24 frames, it would take, say, a minute to render that. But when I say render, I'm rendering frames that are going directly into my edit. I would edit and like, oh, I need that camera change. I'll go back into Unreal, move the camera, render, it'll overwrite the frames back into the edit. So there is no compositing, no rendering to a render farm. It was what you see is what you get. So the term for that is called final pixels, meaning what I see in the frame of Unreal is exactly what I'm gonna get printed on a high resolution 4K frame. That shaved so much time. It also meant that I could, as a director, find the voice of the film and experiment, because I didn't have that typical bottleneck you get on CGI, which is waiting for render times and then going back and re-simulated. I was basically treating it like a real-time video game engine, except I'm rendering frames to put into an edit.
Okay, I think one of my frontal lobes just blew a tire. This is so crazy. You're literally talking about looking into a box, watching the animated entities, filming them in real time.
Yes.
And if you see something that you want to change, you're like, cut, take two.
Yes.
Oh, that's my exactly, goodness.
That's exactly it. That was exactly it.
That I mean, is
you do
so
it for
crazy.
Like, you do it for like 400, 500, 800 shots. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That is so amazing. And just being in, I mean, that's not cutting edge. That's bleeding edge. That's arterial gushing edge.
That's a cool one. But probably why we had a lot of technology sponsorship. Like, you know, people like the company Asus who built machines, they're like, this is crazy. Like, what can we do to help you? I'm like, I need a better machine. And then NVIDIA were like, we have this new A6000 card, which is going to accelerate your GPU. Because here's the thing, like, GPU, graphic processor unit, is the main thing you need to get real time. So the better your graphics card, the better your real time processing is, right? So because we are doing that and we were showing we were doing that, we were getting like amazing technology sponsorship. People go, we want to be part of that. How far can we push this with you with our tech? And even Wacom, the people who make these amazing tablets, like, hey, yeah, here's a Cintiq. Like, show us what you can do with that. And all of that just helped massively. And yeah, it was definitely bleeding technology, like bleeding edge, you know, bleeding internally, because we're like, this is like there's moments some of that I'm thinking like, are we doing the right thing? Like, this is insane. We're making, and it's kind of like, I think Andrea Tateshi could probably tell you the better, but like, I think it was at one point we were watching dailies. We're like, this is half the movie we've done in like 4 months or 5 months. We've done like half the movie in terms of like a good first pass, like, you know, still a bit rough, but you know, but we had the first pass with lip syncing, with motion capture, with action. We're like, there's no way we're turning back now. This train has left the station a long time ago. We just got to get that train to its final destination. And that was kind of like our mantra. And the other mantra we had was progress over perfection. And that was a very important thing we had. And I think it's more relevant when you're working in real-time technology. Because like, thing is, if you go to conventional CGI, you're like, oh, I need to get the shading perfect. Oh, the hair simulation isn't perfect. You know, I want to get it right. And you have an army of people just perfecting it. And the director will come in and like, really try, oh, that pixel there needs to be 2 inches to the left. And we're like, no, if it works, it goes in the film, we move on. And then we can come back later and tweak it. So it's kind of hard to try and, you know, a lot of our friends that work in the industry are working on the big Marvel films and they just can't get their heads around it. So even the type of people that we assembled for this movie had to think along those lines. And luckily we're literally a group of ragtag indie filmmakers that would just do whatever it takes, learn whatever it takes to get the shot done. And I think it takes a certain mentality and a certain drive to work that way.
I'm just happy that the technology companies embraced what you were doing and say, well, hey, we've got this better card here. It's still over in development.
Yep.
You know, you can use this and, you know, break it in for us, show it what it can and can't do. And you're in turn helping them improve their hardware because you're pushing it to where nobody had thought to try to push it before. Yeah. And it works. This film is engaging. The animation, like once you get used to it, you're kind of pulled into the world. And
that's the point. Yeah, absolutely.
How long did it take from like the first time you started rendering scenes till you had a finished, what is this, 93-minute movie?
93 minutes. We actually, by the way, we actually did an HDR grade on it as well.
So wow.
We went full on, yeah. So we started, I would say we started the early test pre-production was around December 2020, was when me and Andrea started doing testing. Because it was Christmas Eve, we started doing test renders. We're like, you know, what does one do when someone's waiting, like, you know, getting ready to have Christmas dinner or something? And then I think officially we went into production, I would say around April 2021, after we did the 10-minute testing. And then we worked right through to 2022. We finished it. I think we finished at the end of 2022. We did festival runs all of 2023. But here's another thing. When we did the festival run, we were watching it on the screen and we're like, this is cool. And we started getting people giving us feedback saying, yeah, it's great what you've done, but wouldn't it be great if you did this better? Wouldn't it be great if you had a bit more time to do this better? Now, if this was a typically financed movie, we're like, yeah, but you know, it is what it is. We'll get it right the next one. No, on this one, we're like, actually, guys, we haven't got a distribution deal yet. We're just doing festivals. Why don't we just go back into the engine and make those improvements? So we did an update on the engine. We had an update. The animation tool we're using called ReIllusion iClone, which is a phenomenal piece of tool. That got an update with better facial animation, better stuff. And we're like, let's just put a bit more time and finesse certain things. So we end up finessing more. And then while we're finessing it, we were talking to distributors. I would say we did the alpha version or the beta version for the festivals. And then the final version finished sort of like mid last year. Yeah.
Nice. Very, very nice. This is, I hope people enjoy this. But the thing that also caught my attention, this movie is set up to be an introduction, a chapter one to an actual video game called Max Beyond. And can you talk about that development? I mean, I'm guessing Epic Games is making...
No. Okay. So what happened was while we're like halfway through development, myself, Sam Ribello, and Andrea Tedeschi, we're all gamers, and we decided to plug an Xbox controller in one day and just move the characters around using the controller because we're in a game engine already. And all of a sudden, we're like, ooh, this is fun. And then just for like shits and giggles, over the weekend, we did like a game jam and just took all... So bear in mind, we spent like 2 years building these very elaborate sets and locations and cars and effects and characters, which is usually one of the most expensive resources when making video games. But we had done that for the movie. So we had taken all... We took all the resources we did for the movie that we built, all the art, put into a game project inside of Unreal, and started just focusing on gameplay and game mechanics and coding. And I think within a weekend, we had a really rough version up and running. We put it on Steam, and obviously very rough, but we got really good feedback, and also people said, oh, this could be better. But we start to realize, oh my god, you know, this could be a game. Because here's the thing, the movie is 93 minutes, it's very linear. There's so many things we wished we could do in the movie which we couldn't do because of the compressed timeline. So we're like, what if we could play as the characters Max? What if we could play as Leon? What if this was a cooperative game? What if we could use game mechanics to jump from one reality to another? What if there's so many what ifs? So we then got a call from Microsoft, someone from Microsoft saying, hey, listen, we got this thing called Idea Xbox, which is independent developers program at Xbox. You should submit your stuff and just, you know, see. We're like, there's no way this is going to go through. Like, it's so rough. But we sent it through. But we also sent them the rough cut of the movie. And we said, this is a transmedia project. where there's a movie and there's a game and it's all built in the same ecosystem. They loved it. We got approved. We got development kits. So development kits are big hardwares that are used to make the console game on. We got sent that. We're part of the Microsoft sort of like developers family. All of a sudden, we're like, oh, shit, we're game developers now. We got to make a game. Oh, my God. So we started developing the game on the side, and we're very close. I can't say yet, but we're very close to announce a publisher that's come on board. And we're making a console game because we decided to use a video game engine to make a movie. But most importantly, because we just self-taught ourselves that, you know, I think the big thing for me is, and everyone on the team, is that we're all constantly learning. Like, there's no way I would have thought we'd become a game developer. And then, like, most recently, we had done a video game in Fortnite. This is part of the Epic UEFN Unreal Engine Fortnite. And we did that. And that was a really good way for us to get our foot into the game industry in terms of, like, hey, we know how to make games. We've just done this Fortnite game. And that's getting a lot of traction, called Moontopia, which is, again, that's a whole different podcast. But that was originally a sci-fi series we were developing. We shelved it, and then we took that same thing we did with Max Beyond. We took an idea which was unshootable, make it into an animated film. We took a series called Moontopia, which was too expensive to make as a series. We turned that into a video game in the Fortnite ecosystem. So I think, you know, we've become transmedia storytellers just through that process alone.
The fact that you've been so open to different ways of storytelling, and you just like, oh yeah, we can try that, we could try this, we could try this, is a delight to me, because like I see so many graphic novels that should be animation. I see so many books that are struggling to be made into movies. I'm like, why not do this as a graphic novel? Why not do this as animation? Why, you know, don't limit yourself to live action. Because some of the times the live action is done too cheaply because you have, you know, those budgets and you have those creative constraints. But the way that you're just so, yeah, I'll try anything. Sure. What you got? I love it.
You know, it's very interesting what you said, though, because it's true. Like, I have a lot of like traditional filmmaker friends, very good friends of mine, and they work traditional television. They're like, that's not filmmaking is like going on set with a camera and a big cast. I'm like, that's one way of telling stories, but there are so many different ways of telling stories. And I think even if you look at the audience today, like the audience are always on their phone, so you sometimes have to think about content for the phone, or when you're making a game, or even comic book, web, like webtoons kind of thing, right? So there are so many ways to tell a story. And I think as a storyteller, you should never limit yourself to one medium. It's like a painter doesn't always paint on one type of canvas. They paint on whatever canvas or material they have to express their art. And I feel like we're in that world now where we have like real-time game engines. We have like Fortnite, where you can go and present a story in Fortnite to 500 million plus user base in a multiplayer game. You have graphic novels. There's new ways of creating graphic novels. You have interactive graphic novels. There's podcasts. There's so many. And I feel like, you know, we're in a very lucky time where now we can experiment with stories. And for us, it's longevity. You know, we wanted to create a story like Max Beyond and have longevity of the intellectual property. Because essentially, as content producers, IP is our currency. And it shouldn't just live on one platform. It shouldn't just be told to one type of audience. It should be told to different types of audience. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is just so amazing to me. It looks like it's so much fun. And I can't wait to see. I'm not a gamer. not anymore. But I would sit through and watch someone's gameplay for this game. So what other avenues do you have for Max Beyond? I mean, will there be more than one game? Will there be short animations that tell different stories? Will there be graphic novels? Yeah. What's out there? What do you want to expand Max Beyond to?
For sure. I think definitely the video game space is big for us. And there are things like called DLCs, downloadable content. So if the game does well and becomes popular, we can create downloadable content, which is essentially additional chapters to a game with additional we call like challenges, obstacles. So that increases longevity. We're also looking at creating a novel for it. I know Stavros, the writer, has come up with tons of ideas with during the development with me, where there's so many pages on the cutting floor. We're like, this should go into a novel. But also making the graphic novel, you know, we've been looking at the way how we can make this graphic novel and how do we utilize Unreal Engine to generate the frames for us in order to create elements. Yeah, to create elements to create the graphic novel or to draw over. You know, I feel like whatever like vertical slices or vertical outputs we get from this IP, I think the thing that's always going to be driving it is Unreal Engine. Because we have an ethos, which is basically you build once and use many times. So like, you know, we're even currently looking as part of the PR for the movie is putting our characters in a Fortnite island and then, you know, sharing that for the world as part of a PR campaign. So people can see the characters in action, you know, interact with them in the Fortnite space. There's just so many different avenues. But also like this movie has opened the doors massively for me as a filmmaker because the team that worked on this film has grown now, and we're already in our next animated film. You know, we're working on an animated film based on a video game called Mutant Year Zero. And that, again, that happened back in 2021, where someone saw the test. Someone in Los Angeles saw the test we were doing and said, hey, would you like to pitch as a director on one of our video game IP, which is by a company called Funcom. And they did Conan the Barbarian and a bunch of other really cool IP. They go, would you like to pitch on it? And I'm like, yeah, send me the game. And instead of doing a traditional 100-page pitch deck and your whole director's state of what you're going to do, I noticed the Unreal Engine logo on that game. So I'm like, So what if I reach out to the game developers and they just loan me their assets in Unreal and me and Andrea and my team will put together a little quick test. So we did a little test animated sequence all in Unreal, very rough. And we got the gig and we spent 2 years writing the script with an amazing writer in the States. And now I think it was last year we got the green light. So we're in production right now. So this movie has opened the doors not only to becoming a game developer, but also expanded my storytelling skills way, way, way better than what I could have done if I was just relying on live action. But also it's opened doors to work on bigger budget animated films. And also I'm directing the cinematics for Dune, the Awakening, the video game for Legendary. And again, because I learned Unreal, my team embraced Unreal, we end up getting an opportunity to work on a big IP like Dune Awakening. So yeah.
Nice. So you basically have become an animation studio.
Yeah, I'll call it transmedia, but yeah, essentially we use animation. We use Unreal to help. You know, we're developing live action shows at the moment that I can't really mention too much about, but even Unreal is used to drive a lot of the things that you have on a virtual production stage, for example, like an LED volume that they use on things like Mandalorian or the Batman. So yeah, I think Unreal has been the component. Like, I mean, someone think about it, right? Like when the pandemic hit and I was getting no other live action films, that could have been the end of my career very easily. Because it takes a while to come back to it, right? And consider, like, the only high-profile live-action thing I had done was the Disney show, Fastlane. So, yeah, it's a very hard time for, like, live-action directors after the pandemic to get back into that world because, you know, the competition's much bigger. Shooting locations had been cancelled. Everyone wants to shoot locally. So I feel like if I didn't learn Unreal, I wouldn't have got that acceleration in my career to now make animated films. And still go into live action because having done animated films and also make games. And I feel like, I guess the moral of the story is keep learning. That's the moral of the story. Keep learning.
Excellent. Well, the movie Max Beyond will be out on digital in the UK on April 22nd and in the US on April 23rd. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's available to pre-order on Apple TV at the moment. But when it comes out, there'll be Apple TV, Amazon Prime for the US, and there'll be other platforms coming up. So definitely keep an eye on social media. For the UK, we're going to be on Sky Movies, which is a big deal for us. Sky Movies is massive for us. And as well as Apple Prime and also Microsoft Store and Google Play. And there'll be a bunch of other ones as well.
Excellent. Now, is there a timeline for when the video game will be available yet?
I can't cement so much. All I can say is it will happen. It will come out in mid next year. So we made a conscious decision not to be a game that will take 2 or 3 years to make, because then the IP people forget the movie very quickly. So we want the movie to still be fresh in people's minds as we announce like teasers and trailers late in the year, and then the release date for mid next year.
Gotcha. Well, that's still a pretty quick turnaround from when you're releasing the movie. So that's that's just like another, you know, feather in the cap of what Unreal Engine can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So what's the name of the next animation you're working on? Can you say that yet?
Yeah. It's been out in the press for a while. I mean, IGN covered it. It's called Mutant Year Zero.
Okay.
And it's basically it's based on a very well-known Swedish video game of the same title, Mutant Year Zero, published by a company called Funcom, where we're currently working on the Dune Awakening cinematic. So that one is interesting because obviously it's to do with mutants. Still science fiction, but much more grounded. The way I could describe it was, and again, this is all in the press, I can say that. I'm not going to get like in trouble. But it's basically Mad Max meets Guardians of the Galaxy. That's the way I pitched it.
Okay. That's an interesting combination. That could be fun. That could be a lot of fun.
It's fun. It's very fun. It's a little bit more of a comedy element to it. And again, I feel like you kind of need to explore the sci-fi genre in general. Like sci-fi doesn't have to be dark and gritty and moody or post-apocalyptic or dystopian. You know, you can look at other angles of science fiction. I think, you know, I remember speaking to you the first time I spoke to you way back in the day during the Beyond, and then you asked me why sci-fi. And for me, I feel like it's a genre that really has so much creative license. You can make the rules up. Whereas if you try to make a period drama or historical drama, or even to a point like thrillers, they have specific grounded rules that you've got to stick to, otherwise you kind of break reality. Whereas I feel like with science fiction, there's so much creative freedom for me in a way.
Well, as we are going to keep an eye out for Mutant Zero, and I, you know, literally Max Beyond, as soon as it's available, I'm going to tell everybody, go check it out. Your social media platform, everything is under the name Hazimation, right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, if you type in Hazimation, you'll see it. But like on, so on Instagram, I am called Haz Dazzle. That's a whole different story about why I got called that. So it's HAZDAZZLE or Z for the Americans. And then you've got, I'm on Twitter, which is HAZ_DULL, DULLL.
We'll have links where people can find you, your website, Absolutely. Your socials.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. And I hope like the listeners do reach out. I'm quite open. And there's going to be a lot of behind the scenes coming out, by the way, of how we made this film. That's one thing we documented a lot. So we really want to share that and hopefully inspire other filmmakers to dive in and experiment and try new stories.
I'm a huge fan of behind the scenes making of featurettes, and will there be like a director commentary maybe?
There is going to be a director's commentary. There's a lot of behind the scenes as well, showing how we put the animation together, some of the behind the scenes of motion capture. Yeah, I'm excited to share it. And we made a conscious decision to document stuff as we went along, because we always knew that we're going to have to share this at some point, how we did this. Yeah.
And get more people doing it. Excellent, excellent. Well, Haz, thank you so much for your time today, and congratulations on making something else so very, very cool. The movie is Max Beyond, out April 22nd in the UK, April 23rd in the US. We will have links, and we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod, the free science fiction podcast brought to you by escape artists.
I rippled a welcoming cadence of light beneath my skin, and then, seeing the newcomer was human, made my best approximation of a smile. Welcome to Helixer Transgalactic Lounge.
Each week, one story told well.
She should have never come back to this God's forsaken junk heap of a space station. But she couldn't help but miss it when she was away for too long.
From the most astonishing and visionary storytellers of the genre.
But because time is a trick of the mind, it can be hacked. And we have gotten good at it. We had to.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or find us on the web at escapepod.org. And on Patreon under EA Podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Arjun Gupta from Sci-Fi's The Magician. You are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
Again, the movie is Max Beyond, available for digital download on April 22nd in the UK and April 23rd in the US. Go check it out. It's very inventive, it's a twist on the time loop scenario, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the game does, seeing if and when they come out with the graphic novel. And seriously, if somebody did do a live game play stream for Max Beyond, I would tune in. Just let me know if you do. I'm also curious to see if this inspires other creatives to use Unreal Engine to get their stories made, either as a storyboarding device to script out their pages, something that I thought people were using Procreate for, but this is, you know, what I get for being behind that curve. And short films, short animated series could be just a new version, iteration of Unreal Engine away. So who knows? And there's a bonus connected to this episode. There will be a video version of this over on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@sliceofscifi. So how about you? Are you curious to see what else can be done with Unreal Engine? Call in, let me know. The number is 602-635-6976, or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also start a conversation up over on Twitter @sliceofscifi or on Blue Sky @sliceofscifi.com. You can also come on by the website and leave a comment in the discussion section for this episode. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or following along on Podchaser, please leave us a rating or a review. Let folks know you're enjoying the podcast here, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. I'd like to thank everyone who's currently helping to support Slice of Sci-Fi and all of the other podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges through Patreon, your support through PayPal really do help keep things online around here, and for that I am extremely grateful. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi, where you can pick a tier, any tier, and you will become eligible for perks. Every month, I pick a winner out of the proverbial electronic hat, and that person gets to choose from books, DVDs, Blu-rays, 4Ks, materials I get for review here. And, you know, to help me prepare for interviews or to actually do reviews for. And I can't keep it all. So, the supporters, fans, and friends of the show get first dibs at some pretty cool stuff. And it's my way of saying thank you for all your support. And if you're interested in supporting, but don't really want to commit to a monthly pledge, the place to go is paypal.me/scifisummer. You can also head on over to sliceofscifi.net. That's our affiliate shop where we do have items for sale, or links to items for sale as affiliate purchases. We get a couple pennies kicked back here and there. So that's another way you can support if you choose. I am currently trying to expand the catalog there, mostly movies and TV shows, but there will be a few mostly nonfiction books available. So keep an eye out, because all of your efforts help support here, Slice of Sci-Fi, also the work I do for the YouTube channel, the work I do on Writers After Dark, and on Babylon Podcast, which is still active, just significantly slowed down till we get some new stuff to talk about. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slices Sci-Fi next time. Take care.